The Tabletop Miniature Hobby Podcast is proud to be sponsored by Dr. Spork's 3D Terrain. From retro greenskin outposts to elven fortresses and obelisks, this is hands down the best nostalgic scenery you'll find out there, and all at stupidly reasonable prices. Check it out for yourself by heading over to bedroombattlefields.com/spork, that's S-P-O-R-K, and turn your tabletop into a scene from White Dwarf circa 1994. Andy Chambers not included. Brought to you by bedroombattlefields.com, this is the Tabletop Miniature Hobby Podcast. On this episode of the Tabletop Miniature Hobby Podcast, I'm delighted to be joined by Mantic founder and industry veteran Ronnie Renton. Ronnie was last on the show exactly 1 year ago, but a year is a long time at Mantic, so this conversation is long overdue. Since the last time we spoke, we've seen a new edition of Kings of War, a recently revealed Noble Team expansion for Halo Flashpoint, and the Dreadball All-Stars Kickstarter has just launched too. So Ronnie, welcome back to the podcast. I'm always hesitant to use the term industry veteran. People could often take that the wrong way and just hear it as me calling them old.
Well, you know what? Firstly, mentally, I'm still only 12 years old, so I can't really be a veteran when I'm still, you know, not yet an adult. But yeah, it's, you know, I've been at Mantic. Mantic's been going longer than I was at GW, and I was a pretty long-serving GW guy. So I think there's two things. I've been talking about this, and you can't have played Warhammer for longer than me, because I had a pre-order for Warhammer for the very first black and white edition back in the 80s. And that's not bragging. What that's saying is I'm on a journey, and you can be older than me have played it, but you can't have started playing it earlier than me, because I've started playing it on day one. Rick Priestley did, because he was designing it, but as a customer. And what it tells me is that if I'm first, if I'm patient zero, there's a whole load of people coming behind me that have had a similar journey where they've discovered fantasy and science fiction toy soldiers. They've thoroughly enjoyed it. They've got super immersed in it. They've probably got plastic crack under the bed. I've got 3 tons of metal, probably lead covered now. Then you go to, you know, school and university and discover D&D, which is, you know, drinking dames, and you go and do all of that. And then you start your... And I'm now at an age where my kids are just at university, and I didn't have a game I could play with them. And I don't have time to spend ages finessing loads of things if I just want to play on a Tuesday night. And I think what I'm able to do now with Mantic is address some of the things for the second generation of hobbyists, for the ones that have done that first journey. And there's tons of young lads right now and girls going out and playing 40k, and they're seeing it on Space Marine 2, and they're starting a journey. But 20 years from now, they'll want to go, I loved Worms. Here's a board game where I get the concepts quite quickly, because I understand toy soldiers and rolling dice and moving from hex to hex and 2 wounds and things. But I can play it with my family and friends. I can play it at Easter with, you know, I played it with Easter with my family. We were just talking about your Dungeon Saga boxes just over your shoulder there, which was still the best packaging we've ever done. You know, and how your daughter's enjoying it. And we made Dungeon Saga Origins for dads and mums to play with their kids, or uncles and aunties to play with their nephews and nieces, because it's just fun enough and compelling enough. But you're just happy spending time with them, and they're not spending on their computer or on their phone. And I'm able to now finally, Mandy's got to a place where you can go, we can do this. We can go out, and I think there's an audience for this and for this and for this. And until 5 years ago, whatever the problem was, my answer was Kings of War. We had Kings of War, we had some terrain crate, but that's what we made. And therefore, to get it, or Dead Zone or Firefight, but they were all the same thing. A lot of, you know, hobby building, even Dead Zone, as Rob Berman used to say to me. I said, Dead Zone's an interesting, easy skirmish game. And he goes, Ron, you paint 10 figures, yes. And then the terrain takes 2 months. Kings of War, hi, welcome. Come join Kings of War. 400 figures. 60 if you're playing ogres. You know, see you in 6 months. The 100 quid is the easy bit. The getting it painted, glued together on the gaming table, that's the hard bit. So things like Halo have changed who we are and what we're able to do. Dreadball on one side, and crazy hardcore Grognard products like Epic Warpath, which is 1,000 figures on a gaming table, on the other. And I think that's been the year. It's been a fun one because we now suddenly have a real array of things that are appropriate to different people, but I think hopefully give you the same experience, which is unbridled joy while rolling dice and moving pieces of plastic.
That is a great response, Ronnie, because my first question was actually going to be, what does a modern tabletop game need to do to survive in 2026? But you kind of got into a lot of that already. Anything to sort of add to that?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's probably two games. I think there's the Forever game, and then there's the Now game. And I think the Forever game is Kings of War, and it's got literally thousands of players around the world, tens of thousands of players around the world, who quietly and enjoy building up their armies, coming together once every month, 3 months, once a year, at Clash of Kings or at a Lone Wolf or at, you know, CanCon, and spending a weekend moving soldiers around, rolling dice. And there's always one of those units somewhere on your painting table. Epic Warpath is one of those as well. And these are long-term, joyous hobby projects that you play the game as often as time allows. And then there's Now games. And I think Now games are things where me and the lads, me and the club, me and my mates are going to play for 3 months. We're all going to do this for a while. And I can paint it up quite quickly. I can paint it up in a month or so. Get it on the gaming table. So I'll buy it in February. We'll play March, April, May. And then something else will come along. And I think it's very, very rare that you can get something that people are playing all the time, consistently. But what I do think is if you fall in love with a game like Dreadball and now like Dreadball All-Stars, and you play it, and then the company comes along and says, right, you've all got your teams, you all know how to play, you've not played for 6 months, here's a new arena, here's a new thing with just a tweak, you'll go, oh, should we do that again? Yeah. And you kind of dip in and out, and I think you probably do two or three of those a year. So, and I think most people nowadays have a couple of the skirmish games and one or two of the big Forever games. And our challenge as a company is to make sure that we have the excitement and fun of the Nows while still paying attention and respect to the Forevers.
What have you learned about player behaviour that surprised you over the years?
If you give the keys to the asylum to the loonies, they'll make the game that they think they want, and actually you've got to be very careful. You need to refresh and renew, and just as that pair of shoes is getting very, very comfortable, it starts getting holes in it and it starts not being waterproof anymore, and people look at you look like a tramp. And I think you need to actually, when you do a new edition, you must stay true to it, but you must actually clean it up, make it welcoming to new players, while the experienced players relearn it. But you've got to keep investing, and if you stop welcoming new players into your game, it will die. And the very thing that people love about the game, they'll lose because it no longer gets supported or invested in. Yet often the rules that they want you to write are anti newbies, and it's because they can see one tiny thing that's wrong with one tiny part of the game in one tiny instance, and they want to start writing rules to put that out, as opposed to going all the 4, 5, or 6 when it happens. Because most of the time, most of the things you need to talk about are actually perfect and brilliant, and be careful. So yeah, keep it fresh, keep it moving, be humble and listen, but at the same time have a vision for the type of game you want, because that will allow you to bring new people into it.
Have you ever followed community feedback and later regretted it?
Well, I mean, yeah. Yeah. Have we followed? I think the danger is that most people most of the time are mostly happy, and therefore don't go on the internet. And therefore you've got to be careful about what you read. And I've got a good example of this, and I won't embarrass the chap, Sean. But he's a long-time fan of Mantic, comes up to our open days, a lovely, lovely fellow, a grown-up, as I would call them, you know, has a good sense of perspective. And we were launching our Walking Dead STLs. Now, we launched the Walking Dead game, All Out War, about 8-10 years ago, made a beautiful range of plastics. It's a lovely game where player versus player versus the environment, because the zombies are absolutely lethal. And if you start shooting guns, they'll just come over and mob you. And what we did when we made the games, we made kind of two games. One game was the player versus environment, but we also created a whole load of scenarios that follows the story arc from the comics, so you could recreate the scenes. And we launched it over a few waves, and that was 10 years ago. And then later we've been doing some resins for some of the factions that were in the later stages. And we've actually brought that to my mini factory right now. It's running, and you get a big welcome load download pack. And then each month you're going to get a few more parts of the story. And over time, you'll build up this cool collection. And every month you get terrain, the figures and the scenario to play. So it's kind of like a part works for printers. And one of our big tough fans says, how am I going to get that? And I'm going to say, well, you go onto manticgames.com and you press the button that says, send me this plastics. If I don't have a printer, send me this product and we'll send it to you. The same way as you've been able to do for 12 years. And what it says is sometimes we just lose our minds in the think that we're being denied something, when in actual fact that thing is right there. And so the only time I'm conscious is when you get drawn into a conversation where you forget the first principles of what it is we're trying to do. We want Kings of War to be a fun, slick, quick, enjoyable 3 hours where you're with your mates, rolling toy soldiers, rolling dice, moving toy soldiers around, trying to break their line. Your heroes are supposed to be flavour, not the meat of it. Your core units are what the game's built around. Halo's supposed to be super fast, super quick, frenetic. You know, and if you capture those essences in the game, you're doing the right things.
I wanted to ask you a wee bit about Kickstarter too, because obviously your Kickstarter launch time of recording, it was just yesterday. And Kickstarter, I know that kind of, a lot of people have opinions on it, and it used to be this sort of scrappy startup tool, but now it really feels like a marketing platform as much as it is a funding one. What's changed in how you approach it?
Yeah, good question. I mean, we were building up a global community in 2009 and 10 and 11 and 12 before it existed. And in the early days for us, when we did Dreadball, the first one, it was fantastic because that was going to be a metal range with four teams because we couldn't afford to tool it. And at the end of it, it had 12 teams with extra sculpts for each team and a prone figure and three seasons. And it gave us the money to bring that game to a truly global audience. But then we kind of got slightly addicted to the platform and to what it was, and it made us a little lazy and short-sighted perhaps. And, you know, I still regret Dreadball Extreme to this day, not because it wasn't a great idea, it was, but because it didn't need to be kickstarted. We needed the season 4 book to come out for the community that were playing the game, and I realized we were spending money on tools and we were never running those tools again. That was all it was. And sometimes you get lucky or you planned well with Dreadball and it had a very big life after the event. But sometimes the Kickstarter was all it was. And so it was 2016 and it was literally Dungeon Saga that the time I said, right, from now on, if what we're making doesn't align up with our long-term plans, we're not going to do it. And our long-term plans are, you know, we have wages every month, we have a sustainable business model that we want, and we want to make products that endure and endear themselves over time. So Kings of War hasn't been on Kickstarter for a very, very, very long time, more than 10 years. It's never been stronger than it is. We've just done a fourth edition, as you said. But we couldn't have afforded to do Epic Warpath without Kickstarter. We spent hundreds of thousands of dollars, literally hundreds of thousands of dollars, on tooling that range. and I needed my fans to come in early to allow me to do it to the extent we wanted. It then blew up and we ended up with 8 factions instead of 4, which we planned on. But fine, great. Look, that is a wonderful game system. And now you've got all that you need. It's all been sculpted. It's all been done. Or Worms. Or Dreadball Extreme, Dreadball that we're doing now, Dreadball All-Stars. It's allowed us to go along to a big global audience and say, if you guys are ready to jump in with 4 teams and a couple of arenas or 6 teams, you can get in early, you can help us fund it, because again, we're going to be in the hundreds of thousands of dollars of tooling to help bring this to life. But if you want the 2-player set, or you just want to play buy a team when it comes out, it's going to be in retail early 2027. That's coming out. So wait for that. And that's what we've done with Epic. You know, the first 4 teams came out, first 4 factions came out before Christmas. The second 4 are coming out in a month or 2's time. And if you just want to pick up or pick it up at retail, everything we're doing has a retail life. You know, the Worms faction, the Worms Kickstarter, you've got a, you know, $100 worth of stuff. Yeah, not everything you needed and a few things you wanted. If you come to UK Games Expo, there's a retail edition that's £50, and it's still one of our top selling lines because people just love Worms. £50, but not £150.
The Mini Gamer is a free weekly email newsletter where I curate 5 cool things that caught my eye in the hobby this past week. Subscribe today and have the next edition sent straight to your inbox by going to bedroombattlefields.com/email. That's bedroombattlefields.com/email. And now, back to the show. What makes a campaign succeed on Kickstarter beyond just having a good set of minis or a known IP?
Yeah, I mean, I think being able to work with legends like Jervis Johnson, who invented miniature sports games, helps. I think our enthusiasm, I think giving the rules away beforehand to show, look, this is what it is. You know, make an informed choice. I think 10 years ago and 8 years ago, I think Kickstarters were all about intention and people were prepared to help back your intuition. You know, our Dead Zone campaign was phenomenally successful. Dreadball was, Dungeon Saga was, and they were backing my word, my promise. Whereas now I think they want a little bit more. You know, show us what we're going to get. Let me understand it. Let me try it out. And I think particularly when it's an IP, I think people want to know that they're going to get a quality game experience that goes along, that's reflective. And we've always been selective. We could have done tons more. We've been offered lots of IPs that we've turned down. Because unless we can do something unique that we think reflects it, you know, Worms, yes, it's kind of a miniatures board game, but when you roll that dice, you move things, it always goes wrong, just like it did in the computer game. You have laugh out loud moments. And I think we've been able to enable people to bring a thing they're very fond of and recreate it in a more social setting. And so I think you have to get all of it right these days. And we're very modest. We want to fund the tooling, help it get off to a great start, get it to where it needs to get to, with a view that it's got longevity, our terrain crate range, you know, that we did multiple times, the trees, the treasure chest, the dungeon doors, you know, they are still hugely popular with RPGers. So I think you've got to know why you're using it, or, and I don't think this is us, you've got to be truly unique and innovative. And I think for some people where they've got an idea in their head, and they can spend 2 or 3 or 4 years building up that idea into something, I think you do see some very cool things come along as well. So I think it does still perform that purpose. I think for Romantic, it's far more about helping us get quickly to places we want to get to. We can see something, we can explain it, we can articulate it. We think there's people that want that. Help us get there quick.
You mentioned Jervis there. Did you ever think you'd see Jervis Johnston in a Mantic strip?
Yeah, no, I didn't. I mean, I probably should have done. I mean, obviously, once we got Alessio to write Kings of War, which I think was the game he was born to write. I think, you know, that and Bolt Action are the two games that he, by this point, he's a 15-year rules vet, and he got 2 blank sheets of paper, and with Kings of War, I said, I want write the rank and flank game that you've never had chance to write, because in the past, all you could do was tinker with the existing system. They were never given a blank sheet of paper to go and write the game that they were capable of doing. So I probably should have been a bit more, you know, as these legends are kind of retiring and moving into the next phase, I probably should have been a bit more aware of it, but you kind of just don't think about it. And then we were talking about Dreadball coming back. How could we properly launch it to a whole new audience? And I think by the end of it, I loved it. I loved Dreadball, the game. I think it was just phenomenal. But we'd done the teams. It was ending up with 28 teams kind of vanishing under its own weight. It wasn't appealing to new people to dive in. So we were talking about how we could launch it and what we could do to reinvigorate it. So when we started working out that this was the All-Stars version, this is the World Cup version, as paid for by your corporate sponsors. Actually, why don't we go and get the guy that invented the genre to write it? And because he gets on well with Alessio and with Newen, I think we'd been for a drink. I had that brainwave, which isn't really a brainwave, is it? It's like kind of bleeding obvious, but. I just said, would he be interested? And, you know, and at that point, we were ready to do something entirely new. I think it had to pay homage to the Dreadball that was, but it mustn't be a rewarmed. It wasn't the third edition. It was Dreadball All-Stars. This is the World Cup rules. This is the OTT, outrageous playing. But also, here's five players. Here's the superstars, and they play as they play. And what Jervis did was made loads of cool links and the team style. Along with the way the players play, along with the event deck, creates just a very fast, fun game experience. But once you know it, everything you need's on the card. You only need to look up the book. It's clever. He's been a very clever guy with it. And it was a joy to work with someone who just knows how to do it from beginning to end.
There's a lot of people in the hobby who already feel like they've got everything you need. How do you think about that kind of player when designing new games, and what do you think actually makes something worth adding to an already full hobby life?
And that's where I think I start now with the what problem am I going to solve? And I'll give you two examples of this where I think we've done it pretty well just in the last 3 months. We've just put a product called we've just made a box. It's called the Kings of War Fantasy Battlefield set. And it has, and it's going to come out that's Kings of War specific, but actually we're going to launch it as a terrain crate battlefield range in a couple of months, because it's got two hills in it. And the hills are sturdy enough you can put things on them. The edge of them's quite steep, so there's not a lot where you've got a thing hanging over the edge and tilting over. And You can be on the top of the hill very quickly at the bottom of the hill. So if you're playing a round place game, you know, you're either on or off. So it's very quick to transition from one to the other. If you're playing Kings of War, you can just put a little ladder underneath it. It'll hold it exactly in place. But you paint them up, they look fantastic. The buildings are card assembled. You can glue them if you want to, but you can also flat pack them. The trees have a neoprene template, and then you put 3D hard plastic trees on them. So it has the visual aesthetics of a lovely looking war game, but the precision that you know whether you're in or out of the woods. And the problem we're solving there is everybody buys a bit of scenery from different places at different times and put it on, and it's all a bit, yeah. What we're creating is actually that one box, 75 quid or whatever it is, you've got a war games table that you can play Kings of War on, but you can play any game on. Exactly and specifically, and it still looks great. It's thematic. And that's solving that problem of one click, take my problem away. And by the way, rolled out mat. So you can play it on the kitchen table, and at the end of it, you can clean it up and not get in trouble that you've left the place looking like a tip. Dreadball, extra All-Stars. I think people want fun. And I want the rules to be the same when I play in 3 months as they are today. I want to be able to know the core mechanics, and me and Bob and Jack and Jane are going to come together and we're going to play this game. We're going to play three games of it on a Saturday night. We're going to start at 5 o'clock and halfway through the first turn, I'll have remembered the rules again, and then I'm going to have some fun. I'm going to laugh out loud, rolling dice, drinking some beers, and I'm going to pack it all away again, and I'm going to say, that was great fun, I'll see you in 3 months. And instead of playing on the normal pitch, we're going to play the urban version, or the anarchy version. But don't worry about it, because the pitch is set up. The anarchy version has, rules that change, but the rule changes are on the cards. The event deck just entirely changes. You don't need to mess around moving things around. And so I think what's the problem we're solving is coming together and having fun with people who also like playing with toy soldiers. And in the meantime, you can paint your soldiers up, which is part of the hobby that we all love doing. And so I'm trying to make it easy, fun, and solve. Actually, on Thursday, I don't want to remember to have to do an army list. Just turn up and give me a fully balanced army. I'll read my notes and I'll play it. Okay, we'll do that. We'll take all that away for you.
What hooks are there for, I mean, the obvious target audience for this is Blood Bowl players. Like, what hooks are there to get them to try this game?
Yeah, I think it's Blood Bowl players. I think it's anyone that plays miniature games, because it's an as well as game, not an instead of game. You're not going to play this instead of Blood Bowl. You're not going to play this instead of 40K. You don't play instead of Kings of War. You're going to play it as well as. Because if I'm playing Kings of War, I know I'm going to play it a good chunk of time in advance. I'm going to make sure I might be going to a tournament, or I might be going along for a... I'm going to meet Bob on a Thursday night. This is an hour game, not a 3 hour game. The teams are built for you, so you can literally read the cards. Usually the first time you play, you just use their stat line. And then the second time you go, oh, if I'd used that skill, I could have done that thing that I wanted to do. It was there. And then the second and third time you play, you really start seeing all of the things that Jervis has built in. But it's fast. It's quick. It's 14 turns. It is very dynamic. It's far more ice hockey and basketball. Yeah, I go up and score, you go up and score, I go up and score. But if I can stop you scoring, that's when I get the swing point, that's when I get the moments. So I think it's an as well as game, not an instead of game. I think it's a game that you just can pop out and play. And then because I've been doing this, I saw what I did wrong with Dreadball and how it withered. By the time we were putting it right, it was too late. I've built these other tournament packs where they're not only... the Anarchy Arena, where the rules change during the game, the event deck changes, these things happen, it's hot and cold, the scoring zones move around. But also, we've built a campaign element into it. So if you're all going to play three games, let's all play three games tonight, and whoever wins, whoever's got the best win ratio, gets the cup, which they get to keep, and a card. And that card goes in their card deck. And forever and ever, they've got that card now. So there's a legacy angle that I've taken from board games and said, no, there you are. But we're going to give you three of those cards so you can play this tournament three times. But there's only one cup. So when Bob loses it next time to Jane, Jane gets the cup. And the cup gives you a re-roll in the game. But you have that on your pitch, on your side. I'm this year's champion. And so we're kind of going, look, if you visited an arena and played it three times with your 4 or 6 or 8 or 12 players, I think you'd have had an enormous amount of fun there, and you'd be ready for another tournament. And in 6 months, we'll pop a new one out, and we might put one team out. And so someone can go get another team, or a couple of people pick a new team up. But I've thought about, and we've worked with the team, on a whole 3-year plan for supporting Dreadball All-Stars for you to pop in and play it once every 3 or 6 months. By us keeping it fresh, so you can play it 4 times a year. But once a year, twice a year, here's something new that just freshens it all up. But at the same time, doesn't change it. Doesn't mean you have to run out and buy this faction. Doesn't mean that everything you've learned, you've got to relearn, because this book, if you don't have this book, you can't play. No. That's not what we're doing.
Do you find hobbyists and gamers harder or easier to please now compared to, say, 10 years ago?
I think there's more choice, and I think that poses the challenge of getting to a critical mass of gamers, because I think, you know, one of the challenges, I'd love to play this game, but I can't find anyone locally to play. And so a lot of our effort, you know, Alex is currently running a slow grow for Kings of War and Champions, because you know, getting from purchase to gaming table, I think, is a hard journey and it needs to be rewarded and supported. But I think, you know, touch wood, we're of a size where we can help people do that. You know, our online tournaments and organised play packs for Halo have allowed that to kind of spring up, you know, and that is very much a younger audience for us than our traditional Mantic fan. You know, they are 10, 15, 20 years younger, but now we've got two audiences. So I think there is more choice, but I think if you can enable people to navigate that, to deal with the issues that they have, quite rightly, I can't find a game, therefore I can't play it, and say, look, we'll help you do that. I think the requests they make are very reasonable. I think you've just got to be mindful of people like, oh, you've killed Dreadball. I say, well, how? You know, it's in exactly the same state as it was yesterday. What I'm hoping to do, for example, last year we did the Epic Warpath 10 mil. There was more people playing in the Warpath universe and painting and knowing what Forge Fathers were and Asterians were last year, the end of last year, beginning of this, than ever before. And now when we come along and say, hey, here's Dead Zone and here's Forge Fathers, you go, oh, I love Dead Dwarf. I love those heavily armored dwarves in space. Asterians, oh, I love those fast, you know, elves in space. Because they've backed a 10 mil game, they're now involved in our universe, and they've also understood what makes Magic's games so fun, so compelling. You know, exploding dice and quick, slick rule systems that are designed to mean you never have to look at the rule book after you've played a couple of times. So, no, I don't think they are. I think they, but at the same time, we've got to evolve. And I think as long as we're evolving in a way that solves problems, I think people are in and are up for that journey.
How has the relationship between companies and players changed since you started out?
I think if you pay attention to the community and set up a space to talk about it, such as a Discord channel or a forum, I think it's exactly the same. I think you can have wonderful, deep, rich discussions. And, you know, we have Ask Me Anythings now. We've had it for Kings of War, had it for Epic, we will continue to have them. And if you set up a space for an intelligent, thoughtful conversation, I think you have magnificent feedback and you can hear what have we done that's upset you and how can we put it right? And it's our problem to put it right. And have we upset all of you or have we just upset one of you? Because if it's like, oh, you've made my army this, you go, well, yeah, but look at your army. There's no bloody units in it. You know, it's all heroes and wizards and magicians. You need to put some, you know, the game was designed for core units. You need to put some in, mate. And you can have a sensible decision there. Okay, yeah, fair enough, yeah. If you want a hero game, play that one. Similarly, oh, look, you've just tweaked that and it's just made this a bit too tough and therefore shooting's not fun anymore. Okay, yeah, that's fair enough. Well, you know, every 6 months we've got a book, let's look at it. We've got FAQs and erratas. But I think the danger is if you go on to the social media and you put something up that's joyous and someone's got an agenda, they get on there and they start banging away. I think you can then start thinking, oh my God, what have we done here? You overreact or you worry about it. If you then say, so I think when we put Kings of War up, I said, listen, here's the things, here it all is. Play a couple of rule games, because what you're trying to do is you're trying to impose the army list from fourth on your understanding of the rules from third. But the rules from third have changed. They're now fourth. And the way that plays is different. And suddenly people go, yeah, okay, I'm going to go play a couple of games. And then they come to the Ask Me Anything. They come to the forum and you have powerful, rich, enjoyable two-way discussions. But I think you've got to be very careful about believing what you read on the internet. You can get a sense of it, but until you actually create a proper dialogue, you can either under or overreact or panic or let yourself get confused. So by all means, listen, by all means, indulge, get more of the community, but do it properly.
Yeah, aye, that's the thing about the internet. Two or three people could come across sometimes as hundreds of people just because of how vocal they are. So you need to always be mindful.
And we've fallen for
that.
You know, we've been panicking and addressing things that was a single person issue that if you'd had a dialogue with them and said, would that solve it? They'd go, oh, yeah, yeah. Okay, phew, we thought the sky was falling in our head.
Do you have 10 seconds, literally 10 seconds, to tell me how and where you typically listen to the Tabletop Miniature Hobby Podcast? If so, find our micro survey over at bedroombattlefields.com/fast, tick a couple of boxes, and you'll have helped your old pal out here immensely. That's bedroombattlefields.com/fast, F-A-S-T, and now back to the show. Are there any game ideas that you killed back in the day and you still kind of think about them?
Yes, all of the time. But at the same time, I mean, when I first talked about Dead Zone, which was going to be a low figure count game, I was going to have it that you actually, you know, you had your character sheet and it's quasi RPG, but you know, they've got 12 bullets in the gun, and when they've finished firing them, you know, you've got to reload, you've got to take an action to reload, which in theory is really cool. Because, you know, in my head, when you're playing Dead Zone or Halo, it is not a fixed model standing behind a square building, behind some plastic, some rubble. It is a guy with a gun at speed running and shooting and throwing grenades and interfering with some guy you can see 30, 40, 60 metres away who's doing the same back. And so when I first played it, however, what you found out is all the time all you're doing is admin. You know, how many shots have I shot? Burst of three. So it was kind of boring. So then we got the mechanic where you know your gun's out of ammo when you rolled a certain roll. But even that was just meant that then you wasted a turn, half a turn to reload. And so it was streamlining the mechanics to reflect all of those things visually that are in my head. You know, we've built the rule set that if you can see any part of them, you're shooting at them because they're in cover. Because in actual fact, you would not be, they are not static and you are not static. You've seen movement, you're going to pile a ton of shots into there. I'm going to knock some shields off, I'm going to knock some armor down. If I come round and I get a clear shot, in other words, I've surprised you, now I get bonus dice. Much easier mechanics-wise, visually much more stunning, much more tactically challenging in the game, and logically a whole lot more, you know, it resonates. So it's separating off what starts as a good idea but actually ends up being a boring game experience from one that creates the game experience that's visually running in our heads. What would happen if a guy with a super trained professional with a whole real very powerful gun comes up real close to you, slightly above you, and gets a clear shot because you're fighting your buddy and they've just finished killing him, and you go, well, my buddy's dead, so now so are you, buddy. Here, here's a bucket full of dice. Have at it. See what the guy's dice could say.
What are you playing at the moment? Like, are you managing to get much playtime?
Yeah, I think what's quite nice is, as I was saying earlier, I finally made games that I can fit in between. You know, I've got the as well as games, not just the only game. So, you know, I'm waiting for Dwarfs to come back for Kings of War before I start a new army of that. But in the meantime, that Champions project we did, which is again, fixed army list. Here's the champion. They're slightly OP versus Kings of War. Here's their three units. It's done. It's set for you. Unlock the box. There's a hobby project. And they play this way. It was real fun because it was like a 1 month hobby project. And I did the thing I've been meaning to do forever, which was I got the, I wanted to put the Northern Alliance on like a frozen lake. So I was messing around with the frozen water effects and then burying bits of lichen that I picked up on various walks in it. And then snow effects on top. I didn't quite pull it off as quite as good in my head as I wanted to, but I did it. And then it's like, okay, slow grow. I'm doing Zikali. So I'm now doing the dog army. So they're nice kind of bite-sized hobby projects. But things like Worms. At Easter, I took out last year and played with my nephew and brother-in-law, who are not gamers. And actually, for 2 hours, the girls went and chatted, and we all sat there and played. Well, the girls came and played with us, but we sat there and we rolled dice, and I could explain it to them in a way that they enjoyed it. Would they do it the following week? No, they're not. But when someone sets it up for them, we had all the neoprene mats out, we had all the different ones, they picked their own Worms, and we had a great time. And I think Worms is doing that. And some of those other games we've got now allow me to just dip into the hobby for an hour or two.
What would 2008 Ronnie think of 2026 Mantic? You could peer into a crystal ball back then.
What are you doing still working, you old Duffy? You're supposed to be retired by now. and the old 26th one would say, what else am I going to do? You know, this is what I've done all my life. It was my hobby from forever when I had Airfix 1/32nd scale figures at 3. I was selling toy soldiers in the playground at 12. I think this is my journey. And what else do I want to do? I don't want to do anything but this. And so I'm very happy with where we are, working with great people. Our customers are great fun. I literally travel the world now. And I was in Australia. I said, I'm coming to Australia. And people were like, come here. Come and play with us. Let's go out for dinner. I went to Matt Crodger's 40th birthday party and had a pleasure. So I was in Napa last week because I was doing a play test with a new license. And you know, Jeremy Duval, a big, huge fan of ours that does the Countercharge podcast, was up there. We went out for dinner. So, you know, if I'm going to spend my life doing something, there's nothing I'd rather do than this.
The Kickstarter looks like it's started well. It's certainly kickstarted. So has that exceeded expectations?
Yeah, it's brilliant. And that's our best first day we've had in ages, actually. And, you know, considering it's our own IP, it's a kind of hardcore niche audience to bring it out there and talk about it. It's going to run through Adepticon next week, so we'll be able to show it off to some more Americans. It's stunning because really that means that I just don't have to worry about the plastic tooling that's going into it. You know, covering that funding goal and allowing us to bring that product out. I just think there's a whole load of joy and pleasure in there. I think Jervis getting to write a rule set clean within some confines of this is the IP, but really having a deep dive on it has been brilliant. That amount of tooling and writing and development and art costume, and we use Steph Kapinski for the art, you know, who's another legend in the industry. That would have caused me sleepless nights. And being able to go out early and saying, listen, if you can jump in and help us support this, it's going to be enormous help for us, has done that. And I think it's going to be out there. And I think it gives it a marketing platform that when it comes to retail a year from now, people are like, yeah, I'll pick that team up. I know those guys that are playing that. Let's jump on board here. So, you know, I think in our mind, Kickstarter kind of starts at 80 or 100 quid. But the sweet spot's just somewhere between there and 200, and actually retail, the sweet spot is 25 to 75 quid. And this way we're able to do both. And the help that we get from the Kickstarter backers helps me sleep better at night and know that we can produce a quality product right from the get-go that pays the studio and the tooling. And I think they know that we're going to deliver it and it's going to be great. And we can then bring it out to retail and double the audience at that point.
Yeah, well, of course, put a link to the Kickstarter in the show notes. This episode will go out on the 26th, so the listener will still have 6 days to get a wee look on there and see what they want to do.
Thank you very much. And go and have a look at it. The rules are up there for people to have a try out. It'll still be more than funded by then. It should be bigger and better than ever. But we're also, as we're all grognards, there's no stretch goals. Here's what you get in a box. It's great value. It's half the price it's going to be. And there's a couple of tiers, including the lunatic. Get scarves and hats and big pointy fingers. But jump in wherever you feel comfortable at. Thanks for your help. We think you're going to have a whole heap of fun in here, but you can actually look at the game before you decide, before you buy. The sculpts are all done. You can see them. You can see what you're getting. We just need to make sure, you know, funding to help tool it, make it, box it and deliver it. But thank you for sharing the link.
Huge thanks to Ronnie for taking the time there. I really enjoyed that chat, and I'm sure you did too. As promised, all links are in the show notes, and if you're new to the podcast, please be sure to hit subscribe or follow on your listening app of choice, and then you'll get all the new episodes delivered right to your door, right to your smartphone machine automatically. And next week we've got our question of the month episode too, so please head on over to bedroombattlefields.com/voicemail to tell us what you've been painting or playing during the month of March. That link again is bedroombattlefields.com/voicemail. All right, that's enough from me. Thanks as always for listening, and we'll speak again on the next one.